welcome to episode 68 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And this week we spoke to Shreya Nallapati, an activist, entrepreneur and high school senior. Shreya watched Emma Gonzalez's speech after the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School shooting in February of this year. And instead of using tech to send just thoughts and prayers to the victims and their families, Shreya decided to use her tech skills and knowledge to build a product that uses predictive analysis and artificial intelligence in order to both predict and prevent future school shootings in America.
What started out as a one-girl team with a big, big dream soon grew into an organization with over 200 enthusiastic contributors, most of whom are female teenagers, just like Shreya. She talks to us about the future of this project and the milestones ahead of her. This conversation will bring you hope that our younger generation are really pulling their weight in bringing a change that we really need to see. So without further ado, let's jump right into the show. Welcome to the show, Shreya. We're very grateful to you for taking some time off this Sunday to speak to us when you could be playing with your dog, as you mentioned. You had a nice weekend, so thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem. I'm very excited too.
So Shreya, let's just start at the very beginning of how you got into the kind of activism that you're doing today. On Valentine's Day this year, when you yourself were probably in school, Shreya, 17 people in another school, 14 of which were students like yourself, got shot in a deadly massacre that is well known today as the Stoneman Douglas High School shooting. And following this, Emma Gonzalez, a student at the Stoneman Douglas High School, gave one of the most powerful and moving speeches of our time. And personally, I, for one, was in tears along with her while she was speaking, and you decided that instead of just having a conversation on the subject of school shootings in America, you were going to take action. So do you want to tell our listeners what action you decided to take?
Yeah, so basically the speech that Emma Gonzalez gave that was so empowering was the We Call BS speech. And after listening to it, it honestly physically propelled me to start making a difference. But I really wanted to see how. Because most of the time when we use technology in these activism movements, it's just for, you know, sending our thoughts and prayers or just, you know, send our condolences. But I wanted to really utilize that power of technology to use predictive analytics to see how we can stop these school shootings. And so what I mean by that is constantly collecting data about these shootings in terms of, you know, who was the perpetrator? How many victims did he impact? What kind of rifle? What was the policy in those states where the shooting happened? And, you know, did the perpetrator have any specific type of mental illness, and what was his economic status? So using all of these markers and databases, what I wanted to use is to create like a predictive analytics tool that could potentially, like, you know, prevent or even minimize the next attack.
Great, Shreya. That's really incredible for you to have these ideas when you're watching a speech at such a young age as well. But just slightly deviating from the subject, Shreya, did you happen to see Mark Zuckerberg's testimony recently?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. And there's a major chunk of our audience too that is similar, who are similar to the congressmen and women who asked him questions in very simple terms. But you just explained what predictive analytics are. And can you tell our audience a bit more about artificial intelligence and how you want to use both of these things to make a difference?
Yeah. So basically, there are like very many facets that contribute to artificial intelligence. And one of the biggest things that we use is data mining and natural language processing. So what this means is the ability to train and a computer or like a third party to look through data sets and use markers to see which data matches to our own data that we are looking for. And from there, we use natural language processing to break down the data that the computer finds into like layman terms so we can use it to adjust to our own database. So and after that, another like very, very good and important factor we have is using that entire NLP and data mining, you know, process and apply it to a software analytics tool called Tableau. And so Tableau is basically like one of the biggest data visualization tools in the world. And what we're currently doing is we're using this coding language called R, and we're using it to have linear regression and basically take all that data and all that mining that we did and putting it into like charts and graphs that would be able to analyze, hey, where is the next likeliest attack going to occur? With what type of rifle? Mm-hmm. And all of these things. So I know I did just throw out like a bunch of complex terms, but hopefully I was able to like simplify it a little bit.
So but let me just start off by asking you, Shreya, how old are you?
I'm 17 years old.
Wow.
And you know, you might find it interesting that some of the best conversations we've had on this show are with high achieving teenagers like yourself. But the problem is sometimes in the feedback that we receive from listeners of the show, we ourselves get frustrated by how their achievements are diminished by people simply owing to their age. So to people who might challenge your expertise in such a technical field at such a young age, how would you respond?
So I would respond with this. The reason why I'm doing all this activism and technology is because, coming from a young person's perspective, I don't want to be in that classroom when the shooter shoots my best friend or my classmates or people who are very dear to me. I think the reason why this, you know, Never Again movement really gained so much traction is because it is for teenagers by teenagers. And so, especially considering this field and what we are doing, I think the biggest thing to consider is I've been in that position when we're doing all these lockdown drills and everything. I know how it feels like to not know what's on the other side of that door. And I think that really propels my activism more. And it encourages me to even like, you know, forego and bypass all those naysayers, because at the end of the day, my aim is helping people. And I don't think age should be any restriction to that.
It's a very good point that you make, because I understand that about 105 people joined your campaign to build the system, and most people are also teenagers. So with such a young group of people, do you guys struggle with credibility? Like, if you want to present your project to people, if you want to speak to people about it, especially at such a young stage of the project, how do you deal with credibility issues?
Yeah, so something else that I wanted to actually update is, like, now the traction has gained to, it's actually 200 teenagers. But the best thing about it is we're an almost all girls team. So it's basically kind of, it's more of a woman in technology project. And I know how much credibility there is associated with that. So, you know, how some people are like, okay, there's already stereotypes facing girls in the technology industry. Now you take it from a younger perspective, and we have a lot of barriers to face. But I think that the biggest way we gained credibility, though, is because some of the people I work with, most of the people I work with actually, have been actually coding from a very young age. So, for example, we have a lot of Stanford and Harvard undergraduate students working with us right now. And the way we gain credibility is because we're talking to the professors from these areas, and we're talking to faculty in like these institutions, and they've had firsthand experience with knowing how hard we work and how much we put into like our passion for technology. And I think that we gain more credibility like that because most of the girls I've worked with are doing insane projects. So using artificial intelligence and virtual reality to, you know, in a surgery, in like a medical environment where they can, you know, facilitate surgery easier. Mm. So because of our passions and because of our unique interests and our like hard work that came into it, even starting from a very young age, I think we'll be able to surpass any issues that we have with like gaining credibility.
And it's only been about a month, right, since you started off?
Yeah, around 2 months.
Yeah, around 2 months. So maybe it's quite early to ask this question, but what progress have you made so far?
Yeah.
In terms of your team and the product?
Yeah. So basically the biggest progress we've made is we've really divided the project into several teams. So one team is called Data Divas. Like, I love coming up with creative names. And those Data Divas, basically we're working on, you know, compiling research. And another team is called the Activism. So basically the activist team is going, and we really got a lot of traction because we were able to, you know, present and like broadcast our project at these marches and these walkouts that we have all across the world. And there will be another walkout coming up that's especially important for kids in Colorado, because on April 20th, it is the anniversary of Columbine. So we're doing a huge advocacy aspect right there. And Another thing is, like, we have that artificial intelligence team. We just got a grant from this database called Splunk. And Splunk is giving us a grant to continue our nonprofit project for a product that they created that is usually very expensive. And we are currently in the midst of getting our product patent pended. So we'll keep you updated on that. But just a lot of progress on these various teams, I think, is like contributing to the overall effect of the project.
Well, Shreya, you just mentioned the Data Divas. I think we should have come to you when we were trying to figure out a name for our podcast. but I just wanted to ask you, how are you going about collecting data? And obviously, data is something that's usually quite well protected. Well,
yeah.
After Facebook was in Congress, we can't really say that right now. But just generally, how do you go about getting all this data?
Yeah, and I think there's a really big like obstacle to that because we can't really call names, but the NRA and other pro-gun, groups, what they've done is they've kind of hindered grants for the collection of data in gun violence. And I think that's something that's pretty huge for us because it's such a huge obstacle to face when we want to do administrative data collection. And I think that what we're actually doing with this is we're going, and we're contacting different organizations who have already compiled some sort of data. So the CDC and other government organizations, what we're doing with them is we're talking out to them and saying, hey, we are a group that doesn't really need that much money and grants for research because we're doing this, you know, without like any expectations of like profit. And so with that, we're trying to take some of the data that they've already started compiling and putting it into our own hands. So that way, like, there's nothing really that can stop us because it's not, you know, dependent on like a source of money or a source of grants because... Mm. Because when we start taking the data away from, you know, those hands who like are unable to continue those research, we're creating our own independent research and we're working with professors and faculty from different institutions to really research into like some of the mental health aspects. So our biggest like stride we've made is we're contacting a Harvard medical professor to study more about the mental health issues behind school shooters or mass shooters because we often associate it to just one specific mental health condition when in fact it's a combination of a lot. So by taking our resources and the fact that we're doing this for the sole purpose of, you know, helping others out, we're able to take some of that data collection and research and apply it to ourselves in a way that we're not dependent on anyone else.
So Shreya, I was listening to another podcast recently where this mental health advocate was talking about all the mental health organizations that she's worked with and how every time there's a school shooting or a mass shooting, something of the sort in the US, immediately these mental health organizations just go, oh, here we go again. They're going to pin it on us. So how do you, even when you're collecting data, it's such a touchy topic
right now.
Even when you're collecting data, even when you're, you know, interacting with people, how do you go about making sure that mental health in itself is represented in the right way? People are not targeted in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. And so I do really agree that it is a touchy topic. But what we've been noticing is with this data collection research, it's not pinned on any specific organization. Oftentimes, they aren't able to get the proper psychiatric care because of the lack of money and resources and, you know, continuation with their therapy and like a treatment of their mental condition. So what we're trying to address is because mental health is important for everyone, regardless of whether or not you're in this specific circumstance. The focus that the world and society is shifting to, like, to place more emphasis on mental health, I think is very helpful to our project because at the end of the day, we all require some level of therapy and treatment. And I think the biggest thing that we have to really address here is not pinning it on a specific organization, but instead working with them and seeing, hey, how can we have like an endpoint process from the moment they've been hospitalized for a psychiatric condition to the moment where they're independent? How can we continually check up with them and make sure that, hey, they're able to have the money? Because, you know, sometimes mental health medications are very expensive. So we're working from that perspective instead of pinning it on a specific organization.
Right. And we just talked about the progress that you've been making in the past month. But and I personally believe that the fact that kids like you are taking such an initiative and taking action towards causes that we all care about, I believe that that in itself is a success story for our society as a whole. But in a less poetic sense, at what point would you consider this project to be an absolute success?
So, yeah. And that's really a good question here, because, you know, we don't want this project to end when the Never Again movement starts to gain like less traction. So I think that the biggest success is creating that product of like predictive analytics, finding the factors that actually contribute to mass shootings, and being able to present it to lawmakers and policymakers where we can facilitate an argument with actual evidence, whether it's on research or whether it's on just the amount of data collection that we've been having. That point of shifting it to the focus of like policy and law, and being able to gain a lot of traction and a lot of credibility through that lens, I think that's what we would consider a success.
But do you have any targets? Like, this is the number of people we want to help out. These are the number of schools and policymakers that we want to reach out to.
Yes. So I think that, the biggest markers that we have is being able to implement what we find in about like 50 school districts around the world. So whether that's in Colorado or whether it's in wherever the other like teams working on this project are, if we're able to do that and we're able to organize 10 town councils where we present our like findings to senators and congressmen, I really think that we would call that like a success in terms of metrics.
And do you have a system set in place now to measure this success or the progress that you're making? Do you have milestones, weekly milestones, monthly milestones?
Yeah. So basically once every 2 weeks, we organize a Zoom meeting where we talk about the like progress that we've made. And it all started with a document I created called like the playbook, like the Never Again Tech playbook, and outlined our goals for each specific like area of the project, which we then are, seeing how much we've achieved on like that bi-weekly basis. So I really think that just in like having all the girls, because we're all in like different places and different like phases of our life, I just think that, having those meetings really brings us together and like fortifies our mission.
And Shreya, I mean, you mentioned you have a big team working on this. And is it the right thing to say that you're in charge, or
yes,
are you all equally in charge? Are you managing all these people?
Well, yeah. So the way I think it works is because, like, as founder and executive director, I have people leading each of these teams. So there's one person who is the director of the Data Divas team, and one person who's the director of like the social advocacy team. And so what they do is like they eventually like all the directors come together, and I guess we all report to like each other what progress we've made.
And how do you all stay in touch? Like, do you have Skype meetings and?
Yeah, so the biggest platform that we use is we use Slack, and Slack is super important because, Slack is like a group message for like work. So we're constantly checking Slack, and we have like about like 4 or 5 updates a day on that. And I think it's the most user-friendly platform.
We talked about how you measure the progress you're making, the success that you're aiming for. But, along the same lines, you're working on a product right now. But once this product is ready, have you put in any thought into measuring the impact it could have on the people who would be using your product, like schools or policymakers who would be using your data? How do you measure whether the data is actually helping them?
Yeah, so I think the biggest way we see how the data is helping them is first in the like aspect of school districts. What we want to do is we want to create, use this data set and use the evidence that we found to like almost foster and like recreate policy on like lockdowns and safety. So what that means is, so I and some other friends in my school have created the Student Safety Alliance Club. So in association with those kind of clubs all across the nation, we want to make sure we can use our evidence to like recreate and restructure a lockdown policy or like a safety policy where it affects like what is the best way to protect ourselves from this kind of a situation. And in terms of the impact it has on policy, we want to see our evidence almost, because it's impossible. I think it's not even about whether you're conservative or liberal, where you're pro-gun or anti-gun. It's about having more tests and more restrictions on the guns. So if we find that people who have mental illness are more prone to, like, you know, using these guns in a negative way, what we have to do is we can have, like, we can initiate more psychiatric background checks, where if you have continuous and repeating problems, then we have to, you know, kind of, you know, hinder that process a little bit for people that like that. So I think the best approach we're taking is, like, a nonpartisan approach on this.
Especially when it comes to policy and advocacy, it's very hard to measure this impact.
Yeah.
So I think that at some point, when your organization grows more in number and grows more in terms of its impact, I think you would have to get an M&E professional to come in at some point. Have you looked into that?
Sorry, what?
And it would be a monitoring and evaluation professional to come in.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, when you're so focused on, like, creating the product, I think it's very hard to see the impact that we have on policymakers and, you know, industries and everything. So I really think that we should, you know, bring someone like that in, because, well, if their sole purpose is to see how much progress we make, then we aren't, like, you know, I guess, detracted from our end goals. And we can see, like, where that, like, fits into, like, our end goal process. So I think that's very important. And that's definitely something that we're considering.
And when you can actually show this evidence, you know, you could potentially attract more funding as well, which would, you know, which is something that projects like these need.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And Shreya, if you take a very simplistic view of things and look at the future of your project and how people could be using it, there may come a point where you stop having control over certain things, especially when things start to grow and everything gets a lot bigger than what you just started off with.
Mm-hmm.
So after a certain point, when you've done your research, you've built your database and shared this information with the benefactors, I feel like maybe your contribution might end there. But I'm curious to know if you've given any thought into ensuring that your product is actually used by these agencies to the best of its capacity.
Yes. And so I really think that that's something very important to consider, because from there, I think we want to implement in, like, government technology platforms or, like, offices of, like, information technology, where they can use this product and they can already and they can facilitate it with connections they already have to lawmakers, especially within different states. So I think that from there, what we really want to see is our product being implemented in offices of computer science and information technology within, like, government departments, so that way we don't have to recreate the wheel. We can use their system to, like, you know, go a little faster into that, like, you know, congressman and policymaker, you know, connection. So I think that that's something very important to consider. Yes.
And so what would be the main challenges you're facing as an organization and team right now?
I think the main problem that we're facing is that, you know, we're so expansive and broad. I did not expect this project to take off like it did. I was very, at one point I was like, I thought it was just going to stick to me and, like, a couple of my closest friends, but here it is, like, taking off. So I just think that we have to revamp and, like, recreate a system where it's more easier and it's more, like, you know, I guess it's more administrative, so we are all on the same page, because, you know, oftentimes it's so hard, especially when after that Amy Poehler Smart Girls article was released, around 20,000 people were expressing interest, and I'm constantly getting emails every day, like, how can we help? How can we help? And it's getting a little overwhelming at some point. So I think that what I want to do is shift the organization of the project to where, like, we can have a system or a person being in charge of, you know, like, how we express ourselves to the public and how we can, like, you know, control that, all the traction that we're getting. So I think that's one of the biggest obstacles that we're facing.
Shreya, my husband works for Amazon Development Center here in Scotland, and through him, I've had the privilege of meeting a lot of intelligent programmers like yourself. But, you know, it's always stood out to me, it stood out to my husband, it stood out to some of his colleagues as well, that the ratio of good female engineers to the male ones in the industry is pretty disappointing. In fact, in my husband's current team, I think there are about 3 women out of 30 members in the team. So I won't ask you why that is, because my generation already knows the answer to that question. But in your generation specifically, especially as, you know, you're someone leading an almost all girls team of 200 developers, mm-hmm. most of whom are teenagers, mm-hmm. is it safe for people like me to assume that the gender gap is finally getting bridged?
See, I Okay, so the reason I created this project with the help of this organization called the National Center for Women in Technology, and their sole basis is to help women and, you know, to get into computer and information sciences because of like the alarming statistics that we see. And so I think that we are, with this project, I don't think we're anywhere close to, clearing the gender gap. Although this is a great first step, because in the biggest stereotypes that girls face in these fields is that, you know, you're not good enough, you're not, you know, capable enough to be handling these projects. So my goal is, not only with this project but in my future endeavors, is to, you know, encourage more girls by having like girls-led teams. So what that means is by like first introducing them into these like complex worlds with the help of female mentors or people who have already been in that position in the workforce. And for that, then they have the confidence and they know about their intrinsic ability of coding. So they were able to, you know, more confidently work in like, you know, all male spaces. And I think that creates like a positive feedback loop where we will eventually like close the gender gap. But although this is a great first step, I think we still have a lot of work to do.
Very smart young girl, and you're building your own product and your own, you have a side hustle, as we like to say, and no wonder you're one of Amy Poehler's smart girls. So we just wanted to know a bit about yourself and your upbringing.
Yeah. So yeah, I was born in Colorado, and I've always been a huge mountain girl. So, you know, I really love the rustic environment where we get to ski and snowboard almost every 2 weeks. So, but my mom is actually the Secretary of Technology, and she's the first woman in the governor's cabinet for Colorado. So she basically directs all of the technology and all of the information sciences for Colorado throughout. And I think that the biggest thing that I've learned from her is the importance of retaining like one's culture and one's tradition while making strides in their workforce and like their environment. So oftentimes I wake up to my mom cooking like one of her favorite Indian dishes while she's fielding calls from multiple industry professionals and the governor. And what I've learned from her is, you know, to never let go of your background and your identity while you're making strides in what you're passionate about. And what she has taught me is the importance of standing up for yourself and, you know, being confident in your own abilities when no one else is there. So growing up with such an amazing and inspiring mom, I've been able to, you know, be confident in my own abilities and, you know, head into this project with a clear mindset on what I can do and what others can do.
So are you a first generation or a second generation Desi American?
Yeah, so my parents immigrated from the United States, and that's when I was born in Colorado. Me and my brother were born here.
And Shreya, I think it's important that our listeners especially understand that what you do is obviously amazing, but I'm sure you have your own downtime and you have your own hobbies. So what do you do in your downtime apart from play with your dog, which I'm sure is adorable?
So yeah, some of my downtimes, like I said, going back to that background or whatever, I really love classical Indian dance. So I've been practicing Kuchipudi for about, I guess, 10 or 11 years now, because my biggest... What I love about Kuchipudi is it allows me to, you know, gain control and gain a sense of myself again, especially when you can get carried away with all these projects. And it also allows me to sometimes be a little more creative. So when I'm trying to embody a different character, or if I'm trying to, you know, personify an Indian dance, you know, character, I kind of find myself really getting into it. And that same like creativity and focus, I'm able to redirect to some of these projects.
I actually trained in Kuchipudi for 2 years when I was in New Delhi, Shreya.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, and I never got to the stage where you get on the plate and you have the little mutha on your head. I never got to that stage, but I always wanted to. But after I moved to Kerala with my family, we just, my parents just asked me to do Bharatanatyam instead. And you know how it is. Yeah. When you're that young, you're just like, okay, fine, stop Kuchipudi and do that. But I also wanted to ask you, so you dance, you code, you go to school, you're a high school senior. I want to know what a normal day in your life looks like. How do you manage your time? Because you're also have to start applying to university schools.
I actually did apply to university schools, so I think already, and I've been fortunate enough to get the Boettcher Scholarship. So it's a very prestigious scholarship in Colorado where I can attend any four-year institution for free. So everything is covered down to the cost of my textbooks and living in a dorm and even food. So yeah, so I've been able, and I think only 38 students were selected out of like a potential applicant pool of 40,000. So it's a very prestigious program. Yeah. And I'm so fortunate to be able to be a recipient of the scholarship. So I guess what I'm trying to, because I'm a second semester senior, I have been having a little more time to dedicate towards these passions. But I think that like what I'm working with, like the college that I'll be attending to, which is University of Denver, is I want to be able to have a flexible course load where I can still study, obviously, but also have time to pursue this, because, you know, I haven't really been able to do that in high school. And I've been working with institutions like Stanford University and, you know, Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, and making sure that I can also continue researching these factors with professors and faculty from there. So I think that like after such a rigid high school experience where you're taking so many AP classes, I kind of want to differentiate my college experience where I can spend time equally on all the things that I love. Yeah.
And Shreya, you mentioned your mom's involved in technology as well. So you did mention that she was your biggest inspiration, but do you have any other role models who inspire you every day?
Yes. So, you know, obviously my parents, and that too, including my dad, he always teaches me the importance of, you know, being passionate in your pursuits and never giving up, and sometimes some of those cliche things. But some of my other motivators and like role models on a day-to-day basis is Ruth Farmer. So she's one of the head directors of the National Center for Women in Technology, and oftentimes I go to her and I'm saying, I can't do this. And also I forgot, oh my god, Lauren Anderson, she's one of my biggest motivators too. I love Lauren so much.
I think she's our motivator too, because she's just the best.
Yeah.
When we spoke to her.
And I just, amazing. I love how unique she is, because like I just saw on Facebook the other day that she was like feeding elephants in Indonesia, and and I was so like inspired by her ability to like take charge of, like, you know, take charge of her own future and put it in her own hands. And Lauren and Ruth are like my biggest inspirations, because as they've seen, like, you know, they had that experience as being a female in very, very, very complex and important jobs. And so their ability to, like, you know, push me back up and motivate me even when I feel like I can't do it, I think that's something that's irreplaceable.
So I don't know, Shreya, if you've listened to our interview with Lauren. You might find it very interesting. She does go into a lot of details of what her childhood was like, mm-hmm. what she was told at the age of 11 when she went to the FBI headquarters, and she asked her tour guide, can girls be FBI agents? And the tour guide said no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
because girls would just sit around painting their nails, apparently. And then at the age of 26, she was one of the first FBI, first women to get into the FBI. Yeah. I mean, second generation FBI. I think. So yeah, you might find that very interesting. But we are getting to the end of this interview. And we usually ask our guests what advice they would give to our young listeners. But since both Meenal and I feel that our generation has a lot to learn from girls like you, we want to ask you what advice you would give to older people listening in who you think might be able to do more with their
Yes. life. So I think the biggest thing that I would give to the older people, the biggest advice is, you know, to like kind of let go of the stigma that, you know, someone can't do what they're passionate about just because they're young or just because they seem inexperienced. Because I think that when we let go of that qualm, and like how the Marjorie Stoneman students demonstrated, that allows for like more collaboration and an easier collaboration between young and old people, taking their experiences with the fresh perspectives of the younger generation. So I think that being able to be open-minded and being able to have no qualms and no like stigmas about what a younger person can do. And the fact that, you know, you're never too like old to learn from someone who's younger. Like even I'm constantly learning from my younger brother, that he's obviously bringing in new perspectives and new like ideas. So I think that an open mindset and a willingness to learn and, you know, really make a difference will allow for like more strides in computer science or more strides in activism. So that's probably one of the biggest pieces of advice I can give.
Wow, that's amazing, Shreya. And I just wanted to just say that, you know, you've really inspired me today. And it's so amazing to see that at such a young age, you're really using your power and your energy in a very amazing way. So thank you so much, Rhea, for your time today. And we really enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And Rhea, if any of our listeners wouldn't get in touch with you, how could they do that?
So I would, the biggest thing is they can contact me by going to neveragaintech.org. And it's neveragaintech, neveragaintech.org. And there's a contact page where if you send an email, it will automatically direct to our email and I'll be able to respond to it. Because, you know, as many people as there are, we still want to have more perspectives and more workers in this project. Mm-hmm. So I really think that's something super important.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Rhea.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. And a big thank you to Shreya as well for squeezing some time in her very busy schedule. We really enjoyed speaking to Shreya and would love to speak to many, many more guests in the next seasons coming ahead. So if you have anybody you'd like us to speak to, you can find us on social media at Desi Outsiders, or you can drop us a mail to mail@desioutsiders.com.
I understand that Meenal just dropped a huge, huge bomb by saying that this was the last episode and that we'll see you in season 6.
I didn't mean to say
time.
That.
So I'm just gonna repeat that for you, that this is the very last episode of season 5, and we couldn't be more happier to end on such a happy and positive note. And we will be seeing you in season 6 sometime soon, hopefully. And until then, I'm Ankita.
And I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal. And I'm Ankita and I'm Meenal.
And we will see you very soon. And thank you for tuning in to season 5. We had a great, great run with so many amazing guests. Ankita, sorry, that was supposed to be the outro. I just like carried on talking. But we'll see you in season 6 then. I'm Meenal.
I'm Meenal.
And we are the Desi, I'm Shreya, and we are the Desi Outsiders.
We are the Desi Insiders.
Okay, stop.